Christina comes to us with a lot of experience in OA and a lot of recovery, and so we're going to sit back and listen to your story for about 40 or minutes or so.
If you care to.
So you have until about a quarter till, 10 till, or all the time you want.
All right. Well, I'm the intergroup chair, and we meet the second Friday of the month. At intergroup, we sit around. Sometimes we talk about how we can help our meetings, what's going on in the meetings. And this, I'm not going to speak to this tonight, but this is one of the most recent things that came about. How can we support each other's abstinence? So the first writing I had people do was, what makes a strong meeting? We put it out to our email blast, and 17 people wrote me in ideas about what they liked about meetings. This one, I think only 5 people wrote their suggestions, but I thought they were good, and everywhere I go, I'm bringing copies of this. So, you know, if you're new to program, maybe some of those things might not have occurred to you. And then, because you came to hear me, you get a prize. Some of these things are things I use in my program, and I put them on one piece of paper because, you know, they are valuable to me, and I think maybe somebody else might find them valuable. So tonight I'm going to talk about change. And I came into program in May 1981, 34 years ago, one day at a time. I was a fat kid, a fat adolescent, a fat young woman. When everybody was wearing mini skirts on the street, I was 100 pounds overweight. I had to sew my own skirt if I wanted it. They had Nehru shirts then. They didn't make them in a size big enough for somebody my size. I think at one point in time I was about 225 pounds. I mean, that's what I saw on a scale. I don't know if I went more than that. But I've been in OA for 34 years and more or less look very similar to the person you see now, one day at a time. I haven't had 34 years of abstinence. I celebrate 8 years in May. But I kept coming back because this is the only place that explains the eating behavior to me. As a kid, I was a nervous eater. You know, so my default, if anything new or challenging happened, I was left a lot with my grandmother, who loved me very much, and adults. And I just never wanted to attract any attention to myself. So if I got nervous or lonesome, I ate. So the default was, if I'm uncomfortable, I eat. If we are having a family celebration, I ate. You know, if I was called upon to do something that I had no skills for, I ate. It was the only way I could keep my nerves under control. And I believe it's what kept me alive until I got here. I found out about OA from my mother, who came to my house, and for the first time in my life, I saw her decline a piece of dessert. And I said, "Are you on a diet?" And she says, "I'm on the OA." And I go to meetings on Morris Park. She lived in the Bronx. And I said, "Oh, really?" So when she left, I called the OA number, and nobody called me back. And then a year later, when I had a kid with a chronic health problem, and I had tried to, you know, make the house holistic, and we had whole wheat this and yogurt that, and I gained 30 pounds. I knew I couldn't stop. I had about 12 passports from the local weigh-and-pay places, and I knew I couldn't do that again because it didn't work past 2 weeks, and there was nothing. So I called the OA hotline. A person answered the phone. They said, "Go to St. Cecilia's. There's a meeting tonight." So off I went. And I walked into the room, and there were 90 people in the room. We had meetings that big at that time. And the smokers were on one side, the non-smokers were on the other, and there were about maybe 25% men. And this beautiful woman in the front of the room told her story and said she lost 200 pounds. And she was gorgeous. Until she said she lost 200 pounds, I never would have guessed. So I went up to her after the meeting and I said, "How do you do this thing? And she said, you get a sponsor and you get a big book. And you see that girl over there? She's just stepped up so she can help you. And I don't even remember her name. All I remember was that she stepped up to be a sponsor, and I called her every day. And I was so grateful that someone would help me, that I did not deviate from the food plan. And it took me 2 weeks to tell her I'm hungry because I had been eating every 2 hours. And she said, can you read your big book? Well, I tried that, and then one time she went away, and she gave me her sponsor's number to call her, and I said, you know, I don't get this book about drunks. And she said, why don't you try a big book meeting? Well, you know, when you're new to something and it's as different as this program is from anything else I had ever seen, sometimes you protect yourself a little bit. And the girl said, why don't you try a big book meeting? And I said, oh, I can't do that. I have two small kids. I can't go to two meetings a week. Just a suggestion. And then lo and behold, a few weeks later, the schedule changed and I was able to go to the big book meeting. And that is when the big book started to come a little bit alive for me. There was a woman at the head of the table, and I can remember her face till today. And we were talking about Jim's story, and there's a sentence in there that says, I was vaguely aware that my thinking wasn't any too smart. And every once in a while, sometimes I'm just vaguely aware that my thinking isn't any too smart. And it's little sound bites that have helped me over the years. And she died of her disease, but she was doing well that day, and she did wonderful services for a while. So, and I went to meetings. I went to meetings and I kept listening to people share their stories, and I just couldn't believe how honest they were. And I thought to myself, oh, I could never say that in front of 90 people. But you know, 2 weeks later, when I'm feeling hungry or nervous, I thought, gee, Mary had a car accident and she didn't eat. John had a fight with his boss and he didn't eat. And it was not necessarily that we had parallel lives, but the example of that people could live through whatever their life difficulties were gave me a strength to be able to try to make it through mine. And nobody was more surprised than I was when I had 30 days of abstinence. I had never done that in my life. I had never followed a food plan for 30 days. So the important things back there were, abstinence was very fashionable. Have a food plan. If you focus on the program, you lose the weight. If you focus on the weight, you might lose the program. At meetings, they said, identify, don't compare. You know, my ego will try and pick out why I'm not like something. Whereas, gee, you know, that sounds like it might work. Work the steps. I don't know that I heard anybody say work the steps, all of them then, but that would be my message today. Because there are freedoms that you get as a result of giving up that little bit of ego that it takes that you could never imagine. And one of my favorite speakers says when he went to do his fourth step, he tried to give his sponsor a lot of excuses. And I tried to do the same thing. I tried to bargain. I said, you know it's going to be Christmas and I'm going to be depressed. And she said, sweetheart, you deserve the way you're going to feel when you finish this process. And I take people 1 to 12, no judgment. It's just that she wanted to help people through the steps. And I thought, what I've been doing hasn't worked before. So let's hang on for the ride. And I did a fourth step, sometimes shaking in my boots, telling her what it was. And you know, the resistance would come up. And I had small kids at the time, so I took a timer and I would set it for 10 minutes and I'd say, okay, I haven't written anything at the end of the 10 minutes, I'm released. And you know, most times when that 10 minutes went off, I'm there writing and writing, and where did the resistance go? What was important was for me to do this And it was, you know, it was an ego-puncturing process. But that's all right. At the end of it, she said, "Is that all?" And I said, "Yes." And we continued on down the road. They said, "Examine the literature." That's so important. Many times when I have been away from meetings, before we had phone meetings, I'd take my books with me. That's before we had Kindles. And, you know, things got a little tense. I'd go in another room. Sometimes I'd watch my head. You know, I had a sister-in-law who was a witch on wheels, and she delighted in making, in creating uncomfortable situations. And I went up to my mother-in-law's one time, and it didn't happen. And it didn't happen. And I thought, I'm getting uneasy. This is, okay, so let me go in the big book, in the living room, and I'll just pick up the big book. And I thought, you're anticipating something that's not happening this week. Live and let live. Let's just see how we make it through the weekend. And so I think that's some of the things that I have come to realize as a result of working this program, that sometimes I had gotten stuck in patterns. And if I don't initiate the first salvo, maybe the pattern won't run. Or people will be so surprised that they won't know what to do and things will be peaceful. I need a lot of touches to keep my program going every day. It takes as much energy today as it did in the beginning. And, you know, I'm delighted that we have as much as we do today. We didn't have a 12 and 12 when I came in here. We only had the AA 12 and 12. And we only had these 30 questions. And the question on step two is, what does it mean? The hoop you have to jump through is a lot wider than you think. And I had many, many people write on that. And remembered it a lot myself. You know, sometimes when things look a little, you know, like they're never going to work out, well, can I believe that there's a higher power? And just not bite into the fear. I always make a script because I've been here a long time and, you know, I try and keep myself coherent. They said, develop a spiritual life. Well, I thought I had a spiritual life before I came in here, but you know, I learned how to pray in this program. I learned how to offer an honest thought. God, I need help now. And then I learned how to be patient enough to wait for an answer. Because sometimes it takes a while for people to be put in a position to help me. And the meetings, seeing somebody else with skin on that has worked this program and been able to live well. I don't necessarily talk a lot about what I ate before I came here because we all have our own drunk stories. What I'd like to share is some of the things that helped me. So when I listen to a speaker and they say, this is the thing that helped me, this is the prayer that helped me, that's something I appreciate about a share. It says in the big book, one definition of salvation means to come home. And you know, I've gone to meetings in maybe 10 states. And whenever I walk into an OA room, my pulse calms right down. I hear them read the Serenity Prayer, and I know I'm home. I'm with my tribe. And I used to go to meetings in Florida when my aunt was alive, and they would remember me from year to year. They'd say, "You come back." I said, "Yeah, it's nice to see you." And sometimes, you know, before I was here for a few years, I used to say, "They don't do it right," because they didn't do it the way we did it, but they did it good enough for them. I don't know that my family would have had as nice a life as they had if I hadn't come here, you know? Because it helped me when I was fearful to take a step back and let them live. And sometimes when I'm fearful to take a step forward, have a conversation that is uncomfortable, take an action, call a doctor. It says in step two, before we joined OA, the OA Fellowship, our prayers for help might have gone unanswered because we were never meant to face this disease in isolation. We were meant to open up so that we might truly learn to love others. Well, most of the skills that people appreciate in me today I learned here, because I was such a silent person. I didn't know how to talk to other people, you know? Didn't know how to handle difficult situations, but I learned for myself that I can be depended upon, that I can take projects from start to finish, that I do have a higher power, and that resources will be put in my path. So I went to religious schools when I was a kid, and I thought I knew about God, but it was only when I came here that I learned to look for God's hand in my life. You know, the goddesses in the beginning of the program would say, I'd say, oh, this is happening. They'd say, I can't wait to see what God's going to do with that for you. And I thought, what do you say to that? You know? Okay. They said, just keep praying. Just keep asking God to help you. And one of the most spiritual people I've ever met said to me one time, she thought our definitions of God were too small. And so I've kept that in my head ever since, you know, particularly when I'm working with somebody going through the step book, you know, and they have a completely different background than mine. That doesn't mean that there isn't a God available for them. But in order for me to have a friendship with you, I have to spend time with you. You know, so in order for me to have a relationship with God, I have to spend some minutes in the day where I take a good thought in, and then I just pause and say, okay, you got any messages? It would be nice if you send them on in. And sometimes, you know, the things that float up, I feel are, you know, what my next right action would be. I've had about three or four profound spiritual experiences in this program. And what I can tell you is that the next morning, I still had to get up and to put the wash in the laundry. I still had to go to the post office and buy stamps. But as a result of those things, I really do believe that there is a higher power and a force that will help all of us. And I think that if you're not used to praying, beginner's prayers are lucky. I think if you ask for help and you're not used to doing it, he knows what an effort that is. And I had to be reminded, so you've asked for help. Keep your eyes open for who might be coming along. Because it may not come in the package that my Capricorn brain says, you know, it's going to occur. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know where I read this, but I wrote this down. We were not meant to live in spiritual poverty. God's gifts are mine for the taking, to be kept only if I share them with others. It's just a beautiful thing when I'm going through the step book with people. And I see the light go on, or I hear it on the phone, like they've connected with something for themselves. It's not the same. You know, I used to think when I looked at the goddesses in the front of the room, one of them was very Catholic, and another one, her best friend was Jewish. And sometimes it used to be like I could almost hear the rosary beads rattling. And I think, you know, I'll never have it like them. And I don't have it like them. I have something that's appropriate for me and comforting for me. And it doesn't mean that I still don't get scared. But a good friend of mine in the program, I called her up one day. I said, I'm in here 25 years. I'm shaking like a leaf. And she said, just because you're scared doesn't mean you don't have a spiritual connection or that it isn't working. And so that helps me to hold on when I don't see the end in sight. And I learned to speak kindly to myself. I learned to say, if you're nervous, it's okay, sweetie. Whatever is coming up, God knew about this too. And if he leads you to it, he'll lead you through it. Just keep moving. Don't stop. I remember telling somebody in the program that I had a step three problem one time. Step three. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. She said, you know, when I have a step three problem, sometimes I have to back it down. I have a step two problem. Do I believe that there is a higher power? And do I believe that he has the resources to help me? And when I talk to myself like that, yeah, this is big. This one is big. But do I believe that God is bigger than Medicare? That was one of my issues in the fall. And you know what? That situation came to be resolved. And that's how I developed my faith. By putting the one foot in front of the other, saying a prayer, and then looking over my shoulder later on. As a result of doing this, I've developed a faith in the goodness of the universe. One of my sponsors, so what I wanted to touch on was step six and seven, because I gave you the cute little handout, and in the middle, it has character flaws and assets. Some great person listed all these and their opposites, and I thought it was a really interesting place to start. One of my friends in the program lists the positive thing on one side, his particular negative thing on the other, and then he has three columns. Today, am I most likely to be accepting, or am I sometimes accepting, or am I not accepting at all? And you know, most days I want to be in the more often than not category, or maybe even the sometimes, but not in the not much, you know? So that's the way I sometimes keep a barometer on how I'm doing. One time one of my sponsees said, well, you know, if God is really God, and I asked him to remove my defects of character, why didn't he just take them up like that? And I said, because there's work to be done, you know? I have to work on thinking, changing my thinking. I have to take opposite actions to perhaps the one that would be my first response. And when I do that, I build a foundation. And sometimes that behavior or that attitude disappears. Where does it go? I don't know. It just goes away. And I'm more satisfied with myself. Change is never comfortable. That's what I tell everybody I sponsor. You know, I'm smelling recovery here when you're having a tough time and you're doing what you're supposed to do. It will always pinch before there is a breakthrough. I think Christian Northrop says you go from breakdown to breakthrough, and that's what the sponsor does for me. She helps me to hold on, to have the patience to wait while life runs its process. So what is step six and seven? Become entirely ready for God to remove my character flaws. And then, so what I have to do, and sometimes it pinches to spot it, you know, in our step book, it gives you a little recipe for what you do when you spot it. You know, I'd like to be in the advanced column for things, and I'm not always there. We fully acknowledge, this is page 63, there are four things. We fully acknowledge and accept the shortcoming as belonging to us. We then examine our motives and the effect this problem is having on our lives until we are sure we are ready to let it go. We acknowledge our powerlessness to remove the defect and humbly ask God to take it from us. Then we get up and go on with life in a new frame of mind, knowing that God will indeed remove the shortcoming when I am right and the time is right. I can't push it. I can't shove it. I can have a desire to be a little bit better. But, you know, and some things on my step six list are not a part of my behavior anymore. And some are still there. But at times I'm able to dial them down, you know. They didn't say, we're going to make you a different person in this program. What I hope to become is the best version of me that I can offer. How long do I have?
15, 20 minutes.
Okay. So, in what ways Am I being selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened? How do I recognize these things and dial them down? Well, ambition, fear, and jealousy, and anger, I've come to realize recently, are things that I still wrestle with. My ambition, I'm the intergroup chair. We are a great group of people. We do big programs for people. I want everything to be nice all the time. I want people to be happy. You know, I want people to come away from the day and you know, say they had a great time. And, you know, when I get twisted about something like that, I have to remember what a friend of mine said. She started a writing career in this program, and she was really overwhelmed by what it would take to get the product out there. And she said, I sat down with God and I said, you know, this is a lot. And she said, the answer that came back to me is, do you want to be useful or do you want to be successful? So that's the way I deal with my ambition. You know, I want to be useful. So if 10 people come or 150 people come, the people that were supposed to be there are going to be there. And it's not right for me to insist that anybody be anything that they aren't. You know, nobody has the right to demand that my behavior be different than it is. So I don't have the right to expect that anybody else be different from where, the way they are. When I'm fearful, I turn into step two. Do I believe there is a higher power? My kids are my gold. They are just lovely, funny, nice human beings. And when something is happening around them, I get very fearful. And my friend said to me one time, you know, God loves them more than you do. And she's probably the only person I would tolerate hearing that from. And I have to remember, people are allowed to live their own lives. Sometimes if you don't fall and stumble, you don't develop the skills and traits and resources you need to live. So I have to let them do things their own way. And when I'm jealous, I have to concentrate on being gracious. First, I have to spot it. That's always lovely. And then I have to say, okay, what is this lovely feeling you have? And why are you feeling that way? And I remember the first time I recognized this in program, it was a beautiful woman standing, a young girl, gorgeous, standing in the front of the room, and she's saying, you know, sometimes I'm jealous of the attention somebody with bad behavior gets in my family. And I had a sister-in-law who was a really interesting character, and I used to gossip about her with her sister. And then, you know, we come to our step work and it says, gossip is a polite form of character assassination. And I thought, okay, we're just gonna stop that gossiping. Not because she deserves it, because I knew that she was unpleasant, but because I want to take the high road. Things got really quiet. I had nothing to say to the other sister, but what I realized was after that conversation with the middle sister, I never felt better. It was like taking a black mark and making it darker and darker and darker. Nothing good ever come of it. So then I stopped gossiping in the workplace too. Sometimes there was nothing to say to anybody around me either. But when I went home at night, I didn't have to feel bad that I had given somebody a black eye that didn't deserve it, you know? And people came to trust me. They would tell me things that they wouldn't share with other people. Why would they do that? Because I didn't say anything bad about anybody, which is what I learned here. So, and the anger on that, there's a magic prayer on that handout. It's called the resentment prayer. Part of it comes from the big book, but the first sentence is always the thing that helps me. God, this person is perhaps a spiritually blocked person. Whether they are or not, this resentment is blocking me spiritually. Help me to show them the same tolerance, compassion, patience I would cheerfully grant to a friend Please forgive me for being angry and enable me to stop clinging to this resentment. Please remove this resentment and show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view of them. Please show me how I can be helpful to this person. I will be done. So I got this prayer at a Big Book study given by another group, and the instructions were, write down the names of the people on your fourth step, and before you do anything else, you pray for them with this prayer every week. And at the end of the week, there were two people that really were underneath my fingernails. I could see my part in the situation. And with one of them, the resentment disappeared. Where did it go? I don't know. It was grace. It was grace. The other one persisted, but I was able to dial it down. And one of the fellows that does big book studies says that he says the resentment prayer for people, and then he wishes for them what he wants for himself. So what do I want for myself? I want peace of mind, great health, and to live in the joy of my days. And if I'm wishing somebody peace of mind, great health, and to live in the joy, I am not sending them death rays. Because love and judgment don't exist in the same place. And while I have that frown on my and that judgment on my face, I'm not attracting anything good in. You know? All my good is out there because I'm cutting myself off from it. I was reading a newsletter put out by another intergroup, and they did a workshop on step 6 and 7, or step 6 through 9, I think they did. And one of the quotes in there, with a drop of grace from God, defects can be changed into assets. Yep, I've seen that happen. And with humility, you're not wrong, just powerless. And I thought, good things to keep in mind. When those things come up that I feel pinch, and I see someplace where perhaps I could use some improvement. There was a fella that was used to lead the meeting in the beginning, and he used to say, my name is John, I'm a compulsive eater, and my life is unmanageable by me. And so when my life gets unmanageable, that's the way I turn it over. My life is just unmanageable. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. Just help me to do the next right thing. Help me to bring my best self to the party. And as a result, sometimes relationships get a whole lot better. During the process, you know, there are times I hit snags where I had more to talk about than one poor little sponsor could handle. So I went for outside help. And what I learned, she didn't like me in the beginning, but she loved me at the end of our relationship. And I said, I'm done. And she said, I think you're done, but come back if you ever need help again. And I did. Because you know, sometimes you just need help with things that are beyond your understanding from somebody that has a qualified background in counseling and things. But I learned that I'm a strong person, and strong people can afford to be gentle. And that's the way I want to come. Some of the benefits are I learned some skills from living. I learned I could take things from start to finish. I finished my undergrad degree in my 40s in 2 years. And I graduated with honors. And I thought when I started, I was too stupid to learn. And I recorded every lecture and played it over and over and over. And I found out I was an auditory learner. I didn't know that. So no wonder if I just stared at a page, it didn't. But if I heard it a couple of times, I could repeat it word for word. So I have a sponsor. I sponsor people. There's a fellow that has written acronyms for a lot of things in the program, and his acronym for sponsor is Sober Person Offering Newcomers Suggestions on Recovery. I don't think I'd be here today if that little girl with 6 weeks ahead of me hadn't said, I can sponsor you. Sometimes I have people with me for a few years, and then they move on to the next teacher. The only way to do it wrong is not have a sponsor. And my one of my favorite speakers says, "Ism is I sponsor myself." So, you know, because I can tell myself a lot of stories, and sometimes they aren't exactly right on track. I like studying the literature with my sponsees. We go through the step book. In each of the steps, I was on a step writing loop, and the manager that week suggested there are promises in each of the steps. And since that point in time, every time I go through the step book, I ask people to put a P next to what they think is the promise in that step for them. And sometimes it's the same. I say, you know, that's one for me too. And sometimes I develop new appreciations for the words in there. And one of my friends is on the literature committee, and he says they're going to overhaul step four. I said, good, good, because I don't like that one so much. But I said, don't take out any of the sentences I like in there. So, and I like studying the traditions too, tradition seven, which means we're self-supporting. And I was in Hawaii one time, and my daughter is a dietitian. And I was at the food conference. And the food conference is like the Javits Center. Wall to wall. I didn't realize food was such a giant industry. You could walk in and you could eat for 3 days. And I said, well, I'll have my lunch here. And after I was sampling things, and I realized that if I stayed there one more minute, it wasn't going to be a good thing for me. And I went back to the hotel and got my gear and went to the beach. And I had some of the MP3s from the LA Intergroup were the first ones to put speaker files on there. And this guy who was an actor was talking about step seven, how his sponsor said step seven was more than a buck in a basket. And for him, it was, how could he be the best husband he could be? How could he contribute to the family income? Or if he couldn't do that, what could he do to be of assistance there? And I haven't thought of tradition seven the same way since. Like, how can I do my part? That's what it means for me. Let's see. So, I didn't know I was looking for a new life when I came here, but I can tell you my kids don't remember their mom ever being 225 pounds. They don't remember their mom being drunk either. That is a pattern that I broke as a result of coming here one day at a time. Today I have some really good days. Sometimes I have some really great minutes where I know I'm in the right life. And I never felt like that when I was eating. So I also know that the life wheel turns and there will be periods of learning where I'm going to feel those pinches. But life can be different. If you change your thinking, you can change your life. And little by little, as I tried new behaviors and worked through my fears and sad relationships, things improved. People like having me around today. I'm an intelligent woman with a kind heart, and I know that this is true today. And that, for me, makes all the difference. Sometimes I think life can be a love story. Not every day. But sometimes I think life can be a love story if you let it. So I'm grateful for every day I've been here, even the hard ones, because they've helped me develop some life skills to deal with things as they come up. And what I would say is take your turn, because we are all beautiful and valuable here. And you wouldn't be here if you weren't supposed to. You know, whether you're here for a season or whether you're here for... whether you can be my friend in the nursing home when I wind up there and come and read the big book with me. Just a small step is the beginning of a wonderful journey to come home to yourself. Just do what you can every day. You don't have to do everything. Just do, what can I do today to help somebody else be abstinent? What can I do? And God will meet you where you are. The steps come in order for a reason. Do what you can today, and you find you can do a little bit more tomorrow. The hoop you have to jump through is a lot wider than you think. When you start, you think, oh my God, I can never do that. Well, yeah, but you know, once you weigh and measure your food for 30 days, it becomes a good habit to have. And one day at a time, if you just put one day next to the other. So start where you are and ask for God to help and see what happens. Thanks for listening. Oh, these are my mugshots. Did I just say?
No, you didn't.
Oh, it's before and after. Charming.